to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 26. My guest today is Jeffrey Kaplan, Managing Director of Think Strategies. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks. And I'm Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show. We'll jump right into the industry news. Big activity this past week was the RSA Security Conference in San Francisco. Now, I didn't have a chance to attend any of the conference, but did watch a number of the announcements come over the wire. You know, the interesting thing to me, Jeffrey, is that, you know, the cloud presents this opportunity for really easy to deploy solutions, particularly for things like intrusion detection and security testing from afar. As you're testing a website, you know, being able to just load up a whole bunch of cloud instances or use a service that's based on a whole bunch of cloud instances to pound on a particular site and test a whole bunch of security options. That's just like seems like a natural fit for cloud computing. And we saw a number of announcements in that general area. What's your sort of big picture take on the whole mix of security and cloud computing?
Oh, absolutely agree with your point of view that first and foremost, the cloud offers a new delivery vehicle for helping organizations better manage and secure their own operations without all the hassles that were associated with trying to deploy the security software and systems themselves. But then the cloud does open up a whole new array of security issues and challenges and concerns that many companies are trying to contend with as they try to determine how to properly leverage the resources that the cloud represents. So I think at RSA, although I wasn't following it closely because I didn't get a chance to attend as well, the flurry of announcements which I saw fell into those two camps. That is, cloud-based security services aimed at helping organizations better manage their own environments to keep them secure. And then secondly, services aimed at securing the cloud so that more organizations can take advantage of it.
Right. There, you know, a few shows ago, I had a chance to interview Chris Hoff, who's very active in the Cloud Security Alliance, and their website has just been revamped. They're focusing now on this cloud audit initiative, which was originally called ASICS, I believe. And it's basically a framework to standardize some of the security frameworks by which you could judge the security of a given site or even a cloud provider. So for those folks who are interested in the cloud security activities, I would highly recommend taking a look at that. Other news, there were a couple of small acquisitions. The first one was Citrix acquiring a company called Paglo. They're doing some work on IT service management. And the interesting thing, I think Citrix is going to put this in their suite of their go-to offerings, GoToMeeting, go to MyPC. The interesting thing about this service is it's a cloud-based service, but it's initially targeted on managing on-premise resources. Now, I think there's no reason why it can't ultimately manage cloud resources, but I just thought that was interesting as there's, you know, more and more of these software as a service offerings, not necessarily, you know, purely cloud. This one sort of a merge of cloud and being able to manage on-premise. Did you see that one, Jeffrey? Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I had an opportunity to chat with one of the co-founders of Paglo yesterday to get a little bit more insight about that acquisition. It's a perfect fit for both companies, in fact. Citrix Online is a quiet giant when it comes to remote management of desktop devices. And they have their GoToManage offering, which they are very seriously attempting to expand in part through acquisitions like this one. And I do believe that we are seeing what I refer to as a SaaSification of IT management. You're right, there's an opportunity to manage cloud resources using these same tools, but primarily, and for a long time to come, the focus is going to be on how to better manage an increasingly dispersed workforce using the cloud. And I think you're going to see more, not only from Citrix Online, but folks like Cisco using, of course, WebEx and a variety of other players. And you're going to find there's a growing assortment of these smaller players like Paglo, for instance, who are going to be gobbled up as a part of this this movement.
Yeah. So the other acquisition that took place was CA acquiring 3Tera. And 3Tera was an early guest on the Cloud Computing Show. I think it was episode number 4 with their cloud platform. And, you know, CA is a big company. It seems like they're dipping their toes constantly in all areas of the software market. But this does seem, you know, they had a fairly comprehensive platform for people who wanted to offer cloud computing services. And I think this might be the signal of a little race for platform activities. What was your take, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I agree. Here's where the 3 tera piece I think fits in. A great company with good server automation technology, which is really going to be at the heart of both public cloud vendor build out of their own capabilities, as well as the private clouds, which are emerging within traditional data centers. And of course, CA and BMC and HP and IBM have all been, you know, focused on that traditional world of IT management within the data center, are trying to redirect their legacy skills and systems so that they continue to be relevant in the cloud computing environment. And they're going to do that through a combination of both organic restructuring of their capabilities, while at the same time accelerating that process through acquisitions like this one.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Well, let's jump into the guest Q&A. Really happy to have you here. Jeffrey, first, how about we start with a little background on yourself, Think Strategies, and then we'll jump into a really exciting topic.
All right, so I founded Think Strategies back in 2001 because I was convinced that we were on the cusp of a transformation of the technology industry from being product-centric to being services-driven. Although, you know, the dot-com bust had just occurred, and a lot of people were fleeing the idea of the application service provider and weren't quite sure what we meant when we talked about utility computing. I really thought that there was an opportunity for the world to move in the direction of web-based services because of three major factors. Number one, the enabling technology was rapidly advancing to make the promise of many of the web-based services we had talked about during the dot-com era a reality. Number two, there's a sufficient amount of experience that the service providers of those kinds of solutions were becoming more mature and were developing business models that could work. But most importantly, their user receptivity to this kind of web-based alternative was beginning to grow. So Think Strategies has been focused on that transformation process and the business implications for both users, vendors, as well as investors.
Gotcha. So a few months ago, I think it was just about the turn of the year, you had an article, I believe it was published on Seeking Alpha. The article was titled Eight Competitive Battlefields for Cloud Computing. And I saw that and I said, gee, this would make a great outline for the show. So for those who want to get a link to the article, we'll have that in the show notes. But I thought we would just run through some of those and you could share your thought on those various battlefields with the audience. What do you say?
I'd be happy to.
Great. So let's start with the first one on the list, which was the collaboration wars. Why don't you give us a quick overview and we can jump into some back and forth.
Well, as we were talking about during the previous segment of your show, when we were talking about the nature of the security needs in today's workplace, a lot of it is being driven by the fact that we're working in a much more dispersed work environment, with most of us working remotely and even on the road. That means that there need to be new tools at our disposal to encourage better coordination and communication and ultimately collaboration across the organization. So there's a battle that's brewing there because it also tends to be one of the first areas that organizations experiment in when it comes to moving towards the cloud and SaaS-based alternatives. So what we've seen, of course, is a tremendous uptick in the adoption of Google Apps. But in response to that, some of the established players, for instance, like IBM, have basically reignited their Lotus Notes solution from decades past and now repositioned it on the web and are calling it Lotus Live and trying to offer up an enterprise class alternative to Google Apps. Of course, Microsoft is also trying to protect its Office franchise and has seen a tremendous amount of interest in shared Exchange and its other shared services.
Yeah, SharePoint is a big one too.
Thank you very much. Exactly. So they're not true SaaS solutions, but it's all in the eyes of the beholder. And for many customers, that means transferring the burden of these kinds of software solutions from their own internal staff to a third party. And whether it's a traditional kind of managed hosting alternative like Microsoft is promoting, or a new SaaS option like Lewis Live and, of course, Google Apps, this is an area where we're seeing a lot of activity.
Right. I agree with you. Traditionally, the Exchange SharePoint models have not been, true SaaS models. But I don't know exactly how the Microsoft is promoting their business productivity suite online, and I don't know if how that's going to be managed. But I think they're all clearly moving to a much more SaaS-centric model. The other player in there is VMware, and you can't discount them. If you look at the tenure of the top three executives at VMware, I think it's there's something like 40 odd years of experience that they've all previously had collectively at Microsoft. So they certainly know the collaboration game, and I'm a big fan of Zimbra. I've never used it extensively, but I've paid attention since the very early days and think that that is a real viable contender to this collaboration portfolio that we see across these other major players.
No question about it, although it isn't top of mind for many organizations because they tend to look at VMware as being more of a infrastructure oriented company, of course, for virtualization. A company that's in a kind of a related field when you talk about infrastructure, but who's made a significant investment on the collaboration level is Cisco Systems with
Right.
Webex and Telepresence.
Right. That's the interesting angle to this collaboration discussion that I think isn't as frequently discussed, which is we collaboration used to mean email and office-like productivity suites. Today, it means video sharing, presentation sharing, online authoring of documents, group project management, and the tools themselves have actually changed underneath the collaboration umbrella. And to your point about founding your company because user receptivity was increasing, I think it'll be interesting that as people change some of their habits for productivity, we might see the leadership positions emerge. So to be specific, I think if we see the use of video increase in business environments, a company like Google with their YouTube offering and the sheer seamlessness is which you can embed YouTube everywhere and Gmail and the rest of the thing, that's going to set the certain companies apart from others.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. However, I'll take it in a different direction, and that actually leads to the second battlefield that I mentioned in that blog post that you were referring to, and that's around social networking. Because I think that whether it's Facebook or Twitter, that's been the most pervasive form of collaboration that's emerged in the past decade. And while many of us use those two primarily in our personal lives, the fact is that they're permeating the professional world as well, and no company is trying to institutionalize that more than Salesforce.com with this new Chatter offering. And in the past week or so, they've done a terrific job because of the launch of their new beta program to begin to roll out Chatter. They've done a great job of providing, very simple use case examples of how the integration of this kind of social networking capability into your day-to-day business environment can encourage greater collaboration, communication, coordination, and sets a whole new standard for the way in which, in fact, enterprise applications like CRM are architected and designed.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more interesting things because you say, okay, well, here are these big giants, IBM, Google, Microsoft, VMware, Zimbra, fighting out the email race. And you say, gee, is there room for another email system? And what Salesforce appears to be doing is saying, the heck with that. We're going to just jump right over email because it's, in our opinion, yesterday's technology and go straight to this kind of business social network. If that pans out, I think it could be really interesting and perhaps fundamentally change, business communication habits.
Well, I can tell you on a personal note, I have three boys who are 21, 17, and 14, and they never use email, or at least they never respond to my emails. They're on Facebook all the time or texting. And that's become the new way of communications with this new generation, but it's also becoming much more of a method of communications, of course, with older people as well. And by the way, it wasn't too long ago that instant messaging was something that only teenagers did, and most CIOs were opposed to, and corporate executives kind of looked down their noses on. But most of the major organizations I know today take instant messaging for granted because it's become so intertwined in their day-to-day activities.
Right. The other, interesting thought there is, is there does somebody who wants to be dominant in cloud computing have to have a collaboration platform akin to the major email platforms? And I don't know the answer to that question, but I think it does leave an outstanding item for a company like Amazon and their web services. Would they ever need to move up the stack so much to that they provided an email offering? Or even on the flip side, we've heard rumors on some of the technology blogs that companies like Facebook might be expanding the way they do their communications platforms to do something like email. So, I'm still curious if email will be the sort of core engine that drives this these battlefields, or will the community as a whole move forward to these new interaction mechanisms? I don't know the answer.
Well, when you talk about platforms, that's another one of the battlefields that I identified in my blog. And this is still an emerging area for the software as a service and cloud computing marketplace. The platforms as a service, or PaaS, is one of the layers that is generally recognized as a key component of the cloud computing movement, with, of course, Salesforce.com with its Force.com offering, Azure with that's being rolled out this year by Microsoft, the Google App Engine, and Amazon being seen as the four primary platforms, and even Facebook as a platform in which people can develop new apps. The question is, will these application development environments hold the same competitive powers over this new generation of solutions that the previous development environments associated with SAP and Oracle and Microsoft as well held in years past? It is an area that's been the focus of a lot of activity, a lot of energy with these companies because, of course, they're not only trying to attract third-party developers, but increasingly developers within enterprises who are interested in building apps on these platforms as well.
Yeah, I think the thing that I ask myself in thinking about the classic infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service is, you think you always have to divide it up into some kind of time sequence, because ultimately, I think it's hard for me to imagine that long term, most companies want anything but software as a service. I just don't think that, aside from a few companies who are going to consider information technology to be a core competence, that there's that many who really want to manage servers or really want to manage a platform for that perspective. So the question then becomes, where do these platforms fit in? How long do they last? And how does the industry move from 99.9% on-premise IT to a large majority of that being in the cloud? What's your take?
Well, I'll give you an interesting data point from a investment conference, an investment banking conference I attended last week. Pacific Crest had some interesting new numbers from their most recent CIO survey. The most salient on that point is that they asked the CIOs what proportion of this year's software budget would be dedicated to procuring SaaS-oriented solutions. And the number was 30% on average. Now, if that holds true, that is in excess of the forecast which Gartner made last year that 25% of software acquisition would be SaaS solutions in the year 2012. So we're on pace to attain that level of SaaS adoption 2 years ahead of schedule. So this is a movement that is very much for real. And in our view, we've seen it evolve from front office apps, of course, led by Salesforce.com in the CRM space, rather, to back office apps that are being led by companies like NetSuite, who are gaining a lot more momentum, to now also more enterprise, as we call them, apps, which might include collaboration we were talking about before, but more importantly, apps like supply chain and e-procurement. And one of the next topics we'll be talking about on my list of top eight, the area of IT management, as I mentioned before, the SaaSification of IT management. So it is permeating every corner, if you will, of the software industry, as well as every aspect of the way in which businesses operate. To your question about how important will the past vendors be in all of this? Well, if we only look at them as a way in which companies can, in essence, extend the functionality of the core application which these vendors have to offer, then even there, they're going to play an important role. But there are a lot of niche players within that marketplace who I don't think are going to survive.
Yeah, let me ask you a specific question here, in regards to the relationship between Amazon and some of the folks who do the Ruby on Rails frameworks on top of Amazon. So on the one hand, you could say, gee, Amazon long term, in order to get more revenue and higher margins, might have to move up the food chain to subsume some of the services that are now packaged in these frameworks. On the other hand, you could say that Amazon will simply view these frameworks as a excellent feeder mechanism to drive use of the underlying infrastructure services. And if you track the presentations and speeches by Jeff Bezos in the articles, he always reminds people that Amazon is very good at high volume, low margin businesses, which would seem to indicate that they're content to stay down at the infrastructure layer. But what's your take specifically in the case of Amazon? How do you think they view the folks who are building these platforms on top of AWS? Is there going to be more friction there, or do you think they'll continue to view them as a feeder mechanism?
I believe your scenario is right on. Amazon is a distribution company. It started with books and moved into other aspects of apparel and everything else that could be sold via the web. And then, of course, it realized it could also be a distributor of computing power. And it every day it gets better and better at that. And it doesn't want to do anything to compromise or conflict or even compete with those companies who are helping to encourage that migration to the web, which includes those platform players, as you suggested. However, and you're serving as a great straight man for me here, this takes us into the next realm of battlefields that I identified, the cloud governance issue. And I do think that Amazon is going to exert a more firm hand, we'll call it, in helping to ensure that there is a certain level of quality, of reliability, of security, of flexibility in the use of these platforms so that the problems in any of those areas don't reach a critical stage that could in any way slow down the growth of this marketplace.
So when you say cloud governance, just give us an overview of what you mean by that.
Well, it starts with clearly identifying how the contracting process for cloud resources are going to work. So the packaging and pricing is number one, but more important than that is establishing certain service level objectives that are met and documented through service level agreements, and then giving the customer a sufficient amount of visibility into the actual performance levels to demonstrate that those service levels have in fact been met. Then it's even giving them greater control over time to ratchet up and ratchet down and to redirect that compute power as need be, so that the real controls are in the hands of the customer, but the level of confidence is also given to them so that they have no reason not to have faith in using cloud-based resources.
Right. So you mentioned HP and IBM, which are certainly, kingmakers in the traditional sense of IT management. Tell us how you think those companies are, have operated and are going to change some of their strategies to operate with more of a cloud focus going forward.
Well, they're redirecting the battleship, so to speak, towards this new challenge that organizations are facing from a IT management point of view. So, for decades now, we've been using NetView or OpenView to manage the traditional data center within the four walls of the corporation. Some of those same resources can, in fact, be redirected to manage a cloud. However, they're not sufficient to do it effectively long term because they weren't designed for a distributed environment like the cloud, nor were they designed for the highly elastic kinds of service delivery standards that have been set by the cloud. So, just as we were talking about with CA acquiring companies like 3Tera, you are going to see an uptick in acquisitions by companies like IBM and HP to fortify their capabilities in the cloud to make them more flexible, make them more responsive to the highly elastic nature of cloud computing environments.
Right. It seems in my view, my take, that HP has a little more catch up to do. I mean, they dominated the conventional data center frequently with their OpenView platform. IBM had their Tivoli platform, but IBM seems to have done a lot more cloud-focused activity in recent years. And the only notable, cloud announcement that I can recall from HP recently is the agreement to agree with Microsoft. What's your take on the edge-to-edge race with those two companies?
Well, I think they both have had an assortment of announcements, in truth, they're both struggling to figure out how to, move those battleships in the right direction and ensure that they still are agile enough to succeed in this marketplace. And that's why you're seeing an ecosystem of startups emerge surrounding Amazon in particular, who may become the new kingmaker in all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So let's move on to the next one we talked about, IT and service management. We mentioned this a little bit when we discussed the Citrix acquisition of Paglo. That to me is just one small portion of this giant big picture. What are some of the other players and activities going on in this particular battlefield?
Well, to talk about another wrinkle here, let's focus in on the IT service management side itself. First of all, Salesforce.com has coined a certain aspect of its operations, the service cloud, redirecting its fundamental CRM capabilities to power IT service help desk, for instance. But one of the more exciting companies, as far as I'm concerned, is a company called ServiceNow, which was founded by a former Peregrine executives who, in a sense, as they like to put it, are going through a penance, if that's the right word, to ask for forgiveness for all the hard work that customers had to put into deploying those legacy service management systems. They're now offering up a SaaS-based alternative. And I had an opportunity to attend one of their CIO forums here in the Boston area a couple of weeks ago. And it was a love fest of companies who had acquired the core capability in a limited pilot and found that it worked so well, they quickly rolled it out across their organizations and have been adding additional modules ever since. A couple of companies who spoke, for instance, were Staples and Starwood's Hotels, two very large companies, two prominent enterprises, two terrific testimonials for this company in particular and the idea of SaaS-based IT service management in general. And another demonstration, by the way, that SaaS is not only about SMBs, but is squarely aimed at helping enterprises as well. And I've always believed that enterprises may in fact be more of the early adopters than SMBs, because they're more educated about how they could at least leverage these resources to augment their internal legacy apps.
Yep, very interesting. I'm going to jump over the next two, just in the interest of time, save the last one for discussion. So another battlefield that you mentioned is communications as a service, HP and Cisco duking it out there. That sort of fits back in with our collaboration theme, in that, communications is really hand in hand with the collaboration activities going on. Another battlefield that you mentioned was e-health and energy management. Certainly, we could do a whole show on the impact of cloud computing in that particular area. But I wanted to jump ahead to the last one and then just finish our discussion there. Millennials and Generation Z. You mentioned some things in there about Apple, about Microsoft and their Xbox. Tell us what your main battlefield thoughts are in that particular category.
Well, it's the hearts and minds of our kids, and I see it again with my three boys, and I'm sure you'll see it as your kids get older as well. My three boys are all using Google Apps in school. It started in a very ad hoc fashion with young teachers coming into their classrooms, bringing these new tools in almost a clandestine fashion. But quickly, I've seen the university where my son goes, the high school and middle schools where my other two guys go, adopting Google Apps across the organization. And that's not the only place where it's being adopted. It's also SaaS-based administration tools and budgeting tools and coordination and asset management tools. There's a long list of SaaS-based solutions being aimed at the education marketplace, both public and higher education, which is all going to influence the view of not only the teachers and the administrators, but the kids who are going through the school systems, in the same way that Apple was able to win a new generation of users of its Macs and PCs, because they put those systems into the elementary schools 10, 20 years ago.
Right.
Now, what's interesting to note, of course, and the irony, if you have boys like I do, they spend far too many hours playing games on Xbox, which is a Microsoft device.
Mm-hmm.
But they have no loyalty to Microsoft Office when it comes to using basic Office apps. And that's why kids like mine are using Google Apps today. And you're
right.
Going to see that be the case going forward, I think, in a lot of organizations.
Yeah. And I think the other angle in there, and Apple's strength in the consumer market, is that I think there's little doubt that they will own the cloud computing areas specific to personal media when it comes to music and video and media consumption. We've all heard about Apple's data center buildouts and rumors about their new models for how they're going to deal with music distribution based on their acquisition of Lala several months back. So that's the other angle when you talk about cloud computing. There's all the sort of business-oriented side that we can talk about, the players that we've mentioned throughout the show. When you talk about the personal media side and media consumption side of cloud computing, I think Apple certainly is in the position to be the undisputed king, so we'll see what happens there.
Absolutely agree. You look at the evolution of those consumer devices from the iTouch, iPod, to the iPhone, and now the iPad. And I know, again, looking not only at my kids, but my cohorts in business, they are all making the transition from, of course, the iPod to the iPhone, using it for business apps. It's becoming more and more likely that they're going to be looking at the iPad as another device for their day-to-day work.
Yeah, and I am just a huge fan in general now of this movement, even across large companies, to put the technology device decision back into the hands of the consumer and try to abstract that away and offer services to people regardless of which device they want to use.
Absolutely agreed. That democratization or consumerization of IT is becoming actually the standard for most organizations, but it places greater pressures on the IT organization to properly manage that environment. And once again, the cloud and SaaS-based alternatives seem to do a better job of it than the traditional management solutions that sat behind the four walls of the firewall.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, great. That's let's call that a wrap for reviewing your 8 competitive battlefields. We'll put a link to that post in the show notes for people who want more details. And we'll jump into the next section of the show. Just a quick mention of a couple of meetups and shows. The Cloud Connect event is coming up in mid-March in Santa Clara. Also, there'll be a special Silicon Valley-based get-together of the SF Cloud Club meetup, so we'll have some links to that in the show notes. And let's go into cloud tips, where we make some recommendations and pointers to favorite cloud services and offerings we can recommend to the listeners. Jeff, why don't you go ahead first with your cloud tip?
Oh, I have got a great one. Just happened yesterday. The company called Right Now, which is in the CRM space, issued a cloud challenge because even though we call software as a service and cloud computing on-demand services, too often they, in fact, are not. You really cannot procure them instantaneously or even turn them off as quickly as you would like because of a variety of provisioning and contracting obstacles to making that happen. So Right Now has adopted a set of user rights that were developed by a variety of analysts and has used that as a proclamation for a new set of contracting standards that it's adopting and challenging the rest of the cloud computing marketplace to do as well. And I think it's going to make for some interesting discussion, and I think it's also going to reset the standards for the way in which contracting is done within the cloud computing environment, but also how it's done in the traditional software world.
Great, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. My cloud tip this week is a company called Get Satisfaction. They provide community-powered forums for companies that want to really put their user base in contact with each other to solve problems with products. Perfect for companies that have a try and buy or a free eval or a free demonstration of their software and then allow customers to interact with themselves. Community discussion forums offered as a service. We have not started using it yet, but I spent quite a bit of time looking at it these past few days, and it looks like a very, very interesting service. So if anybody needs that kind of functionality for their business, take a look at Get Satisfaction. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. And that's a wrap for this one. Jeff, if people want to find out more about you or your company, are there email addresses, websites, Twitter addresses for them to take a look at?
Sure. Twitter at ThinkStrategies. ThinkStrategies.com is our corporate site. By the way, we also have an online directory called the SaaS Showplace. The quickest way to get to that is thinksaas.com. And you can find me at either info@thinkstrategies or jkaplan@thinkstrategies.com. And I want to thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, it was fun. Thanks very much. And for me, Gary Ornstein, there is an occasional Twitter message that goes out. That's just at Gary Ornstein on Twitter. And want to thank everybody for listening to the show. You can visit us and see show notes at thecloudcomputingshow.com or email us with ideas, suggestions for future guests, or anything else that comes to your mind around cloud computing as it relates to the show at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. We're also in iTunes. You can subscribe there by simply searching for The Cloud Computing Show in the podcast directory search box. And we look forward to seeing you on the next show. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.